It is time for our local newscast from the award-winning KDNK News team for Tuesday morning, March 7th. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. Last week, Senator Michael Bennett reintroduced the Thompson Divide Withdrawal and Protection Act in the U.S. Senate. If passed, the bill would permanently withdraw much of the Thompson Divide from future natural gas leasing. The bill also includes a provision to lease and generate energy from excess methane in existing and abandoned coal mines in the North Fork Valley. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh spoke with Peter Hart, staff attorney for Wilderness Workshop, and Matt Reed, public lands director for High Country Conservation Advocates in Crested Butte, about what the bill means.
The bill is good news for those who want to preserve the Thompson Divide area south of Carbondale. Basically, it would permanently protect hundreds of thousands of acres in the heart of the Thompson Divide from ever being leased for natural gas drilling. Ever. Peter Hart says the bill has undergone some changes since it was originally introduced in 2013. First, it would require subleases in the Wolf Creek storage field to be given up.
And that is something that would eliminate the threat of drilling up there.
These leases were not canceled. SG Interests is planning to drill an exploratory well for natural gas in the Mancos Formation deep below the storage field and would most likely be approached about giving up that lease. The second change is that energy companies whose leases were canceled would be compensated by something called credits.
The companies would be given credits with the federal government that they could use to bid on new leases, or they could use to pay, debts that they have to the federal government, maybe associated with royalties on production or rentals on existing leases or that kind of thing.
Hart says the idea of giving credits to the energy companies isn't something Wilderness Workshop would necessarily like to see.
These leases were never diligently developed during their 10-year term. And that they should have expired by their own terms. We have challenged the decision to suspend these leases and extend them for years. We haven't won that battle. So I think that we have to kind of swallow hard when it comes to giving these leaseholders, additional reimbursements.
But, he adds, the benefits of permanent protection and a way out of the exploratory leases in the Wolf Creek field outweigh giving leaseholders something for leases that should have expired a long time ago. The final change to the bill would create a program for capturing and leasing methane in the North Fork Valley to generate energy. Matt Reed, public lands director for High Country Conservation Advocates, formerly High Country Citizens Alliance out of Crested Butte, told KDNK that according to the bill, this is supposed to happen in stages.
One provision requires that not later than 1 year after the date of enactment of the act, there shall be an inventory of all significant emissions of methane in the North Fork Valley, and that includes methane emissions from active, inactive, and abandoned coal mines.
The second part is a program for leasing methane to produce energy. Reed says North Fork coal is gassy, meaning it produces a lot of methane. He adds that the idea of capturing methane and putting it to use is a good one, but...
Now, one caveat I have is it doesn't address what is right now the largest single source of industrial methane pollution in the state, and that's the West Elk Mine.
The West Elk coal mine is in Somerset, on the way to Paonia from the Crystal River Valley on Highway 133. In May 2016, Conservation Colorado put West Elk methane emissions at 58,000 tons a year. Ted Zukowski, an attorney for Earth Justice, compared West Elk's 2014 methane emissions to 650,000 tons of carbon dioxide. And last December, the U.S. Forest Service approved a controversial expansion of the mine.
So far, the Forest Service hasn't required methane capture from the West Elk mine. BLM hasn't required methane capture from the West Elk mines. Gunnison County hasn't made that requirement. And I don't see this legislation as putting that requirement in.
Like Peter Hart of Wilderness Workshop, Reed says the bill is a step in the right direction, but he would still like to see it have more teeth when it comes to methane capture requirements for the West Elk Mine. For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
Robbie Gwynn, vice president of SG Interests, has not returned KDNK's calls, and Senator Bennett's office is still working on KDNK's request for more information about the bill. We will continue to follow this story. On Sunday, March 5th, close to 9 p.m., the Pitkin County Sheriff received a call about a climber who had not returned from Pyramid Peak and was overdue. The climber has been identified as 23-year-old Ryan David Montoya, originally from California. Rescue teams, including Mountain Rescue Aspen, began a search Monday afternoon, and despite the extreme weather, were able to find a snow cave possibly used by Montoya, but the man himself was not found. The Pitkin County Sheriff's Office and Mountain Rescue Aspen will resume the search this morning, according to a press release. Pyramid Peak is just south of Aspen and tops out at 14,020 feet. Severe gale force winds were reported on the mountain Monday afternoon with a wind chill factor of minus 42 degrees. The first half of 2016 saw the highest increase in police-related shooting deaths in 6 years here in Colorado, Eric Galatis reports.
The number of shootings involving police in Colorado is on the rise, almost doubling between 2011 and 2015, and only one officer died during those encounters compared to 132 civilians killed. That's according to a new report mandated by a state law passed in 2015. It created uniform rules for documenting officer-involved shootings, and spokesperson Crystal McCoy says the Aurora Police Department supports the measure.
I think it enhances transparency for the public. It doesn't hinder us in any way, shape, or form. It hasn't created any complications. It's not difficult.
Former State Senator Ellen Roberts, who co-sponsored the original bill, told the University of Colorado News Corps it should help the state identify issues that need to be addressed. But participation is lagging. Some 279 agencies statewide meet the law's reporting requirements. Only 75 submitted reports, up from 48 agencies the previous year. While the officers in only 10% of police-involved shootings were Hispanic, 29% of civilians involved were Hispanic. Alexandra Alonzo with CLARO, the Colorado Latino Leadership Advocacy and Research Organization, says it's evidence of the gap between minority communities and police that both sides are working to bridge.
You know, there's not a lot of building of relationships between police officers and the community members. People see a police officer for the uniform and not for the human that lives there.
Alonzo adds Denver's police department has held meetings with organizations like CLARO and Black Lives Matter.
Looking at the other side of that lens, there were a lot of community members who showed up and said, you know, police officers are not meeting us where we are. There's not enough dialogue.
Alonzo says CLARO is also working to build a program that connects young people with police. The annual report on officer-involved shootings is compiled by the Colorado Department of Public Safety. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK. This story was produced with original reporting from Stephanie Cook of CU News Corps at the University of Colorado Boulder.